I'm going to talk about radio station logos, if that's okay. I'm trying to think how to start with that.
Well, the history of it is a good place to start.
Let's start with the history of it.
Because, and by the way, hello world.
The world has got pushed.
When Jeff and I began this, I had no idea that it would be heard by such a wide audience of fans and aficionados. So hello to all of you out there. And don't take anything I say too seriously, because what do I know? The history of the logo is it early jingles did not have a logo. They were just individual little compositions, little short ditties, if you will. And when it came time to sing the name of the station, it was just part of the melody of whatever was going on, but it was not consistent from cut to cut. And it really wasn't until the late 50s, because, all right, when did jingles begin? Well, jingles didn't actually begin with PAMs. There were jingles prior to PAMs. There were jingles in the 40s. There were jingles in the 30s. In the early days of radio, there were a lot of commercial jingles and a few station jingles. Most often, they were performed live on the air by whatever musical group was doing a show. And then later on, they were transcribed onto ETs, which is a fancy name for electrical transcriptions. They were on records, basically. But in the late 50s, a very creative and talented guy by the name of Chuck Blore was the program director, I believe, at KFWB in Los Angeles, which was a top 40 station. And I don't know for certain that this was the first instance of it, but it was one of the better known ones, where he had a custom series of jingles commissioned that were done in Los Angeles, and every time they sang KFWB, they sang it to the same melody,
right.
You know, Channel 98. Right, and that's one of the earliest instances of consistency of logo, maybe not the first, but one of the early ones.
So he hit on that presumably because he thought this is going to then make the station more identifiable.
Yeah, because he is at heart a creative and advertising and imaging guy, and he later went on to form Chuck Blore Creative Services, where he made tons of award-winning commercials for clients, mm. and a few jingle packages, not a huge catalog, but the ones that he was behind were always very cherished by collectors because they were so interesting. He did the WCFL jingles, and he did a very nice package for WCBS-FM in the 70s before it was an oldie station.
Right.
But anyway, I digress as usual. So this idea of having an identifiable melody so that every time the call letters of the station or the name of the station appears in the jingle, it's got a common theme. Now, you know, that whole idea of audio trademark or audio branding, you know, goes way, way back in time because the NBC radio network, NBC, National Broadcasting Company, they identified themselves with three chimes.
Right, yeah.
And popular legend has it that the notes that I just played are G, E, C, which could stand for General Electric Corporation, which owned NBC. So,
right.
So there is a urban legend that that's what's behind the melody, and it was decades before I was born, so I don't know.
If that theory were applied more broadly, so BBC would sound like what, just out of interest?
Well, they did that. They did that on one of those BBC local
really?
Packages.
Did they?
Yeah. But anyway, and then you'd also get WI, B flat, C, like, you know, whatever yeah. it was. So, neither of those, by the way, was correct. But anyway, I mean, NBC had used these three chimes to identify the radio network in the 40s and so on. So, you know, there was a precedent for this sound is supposed to represent this thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, KFWB was one of the earliest ones to take that to the next level. The early PAMS jingles, you know, starting with Series 1 through Series 13, with the exception of Series 10, you know, they didn't have consistent logos from cut to cut. In Series 10, they hit upon the idea of always using whenever the logo was sung. But they did it more as a novelty. It was like, okay, well, here's something. You know, we'll start off, or they advise, I don't know if any stations actually did this, but if you listen to the demo of Series 10, they say, well, you know, here's somebody whistling that. And, you know, they had a little jingle with no lyrics. It's just somebody whistling.
Yeah.
And they say, oh, then everybody will wonder what that is. And then you can come on a few weeks later and go, K-E-L-O, 1-2-3-O, or whatever it was. And that was kind of an exception. But it wasn't until Series 14 in 1961 that PAMS said, oh, well, the way to do this jingle thing is to have a consistent logo in every cut, and what PAMS brought to the party, what PAMS added, is let's write the music tracks so that each station could have its own logo. So it's not just... See, the Series 10 was consistent, but it had to be that logo. It had to be...
Yep, understood.
But in 61, they said, well, wait, you know, we may have some stations who want to be this and some stations who want to be that, and let's construct the music tracks to allow for that, which was the big selling point of Series 14. And they were so committed to that that they basically took Series 1 through 13 off the market, put those tapes in a box,
oh, right.
and put them away, where they remained until I showed up and wondered where they were.
That explains why those of us, you know, collecting, we're wondering about these almost mythical jingle packages.
Yeah, myself included. When I was collecting jingles and trading tapes and so forth, a lot of people had things from Series 14 up, and
yeah.
no one knew anything
right.
about the first 13.
It's like the Holy Grail.
It was. And like I told you, they had a storeroom where they just had cartons and cartons of tapes, very disorganized way, just because they'd run out of room for them in the main building. And I spent many a weekend going through there looking for these elusive things, which I finally found and rescued and brought back to Office.
But does that mean it was a recognition by the people at PAMS that they had hit upon something which was so groundbreaking, you know, in the future of identification, that it was literally out with the old and in with the new? So the old was boxed up, you know, hidden.
Yeah, yeah. I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. They were just committed to, okay, this is the way to do this. And let's go with this. So in the earliest days of that, which was to say Series 14, a lot of those cuts were written with some sort of introduction, and then when it's time to sing the logo, just about everything stops happening. You know, there's like, and then it goes back to, you know, to just simplify the track to allow different melodies to go there. And then as it was refined through the next packages through the years, you know, then the writers discovered that there were certain chords that you could hold on to that almost every popular logo of the day would musically fit over. And the Pam's term for that was a pedal note. It's just right. Something to...
So that would not sound like the logo. That would sound like the chord sequence, which would be underneath it.
Yeah, but it really wasn't a sequence at all. It was just kind of a like... I'm just trying to think of an example, but if you take a chord or if you take a jingle and at the point where it's time to go to the logo, you just kind of play that. Well, you can go, you know, let's see. It would be good if I'd thought this out ahead of time. Okay, so if you got this chord playing, you can play over it, or you could 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 play, you know.
Is it dependent on the notes which are going to be in the logo being in that chord?
It helps. But it's what's called a sus chord or a suspended chord. It's not a resolved chord. This chord has a lot of finality.
Yeah.
And this wants to go somewhere else. It wants to resolve to here. So what they discovered, and a lot of the really good cuts, you know, in the mid-60s, the series 25, 6, 7, 8, 9, 30, and so on, you know, they're kind of jazzy, and when they get to the logo, you know, it's just kind of like this walking bass line that goes, and that's because you can put, you know, any of those logos over that. So that became the standard thing was for each station, and this, again, is back in the golden age, when program directors actually had only one station to tend to, had the time to think about it, and took great pride in their jingles being a little bit better or different than the guy down the road. So there was actually this little competition among all these stations to be more creative than each other. You know, there were lots of different logos in common use. Some of them were derived from old songs that had something to do with the location of the
most famous being the "We'll Take Staten Island."
I'll take Manhattan.
I'll take Manhattan. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, the Bronx End. I'll take Manhattan, the Bronx End, you know. And from there it is. From there, you know, it just finishes up and turns into the logo. So
was that what kind of period did WABC start using that logo?
Very early 60s. In their first PAMS package, which I think... well, I know they had done the All-American in 63. I think it might have been 61 or 2.
Right.
They had jingles prior to that, non-PAMS jingles, that had a completely different logo. It has what we here call... the KDKA logo, which we think of as KDKA Pittsburgh, but it was WABC, Channel 77.
Huh.
And those were, you know, not Pam's. Those were what was it? Was it Sandy? No, not Sandy and Green. Ross. Anyway, they were done in L.A. It was a different thing.
And am I right in understanding that because they were essentially using a sequence of notes which had come from this famous song, that it was problematic for them to continue doing that?
Well, especially if you're a big station in a big city with a big audience owned by a big company that presumably has a big bank account, you become a very good target. But, I mean, they didn't even... You know, they didn't try to hide the fact that it came from the song. In fact, they played off of the song. Yeah. In fact, at one point, they actually had a few cuts that went, you know, I'll Take Manhattan and WABC. There's a famous Trella Hart song jingle in Series 33 that does that. So the station, paid, something for the rights to the publisher/composer of the song. Which I think was Richard Rodgers, wasn't it?
I think so, yeah.
For quite a long time to do that. But there were other examples too. I mean, WGH in Norfolk, Virginia was WGH in Old Virginia, which is from an old song called Carry Me Back to Old Virginia. Or Old Virginia, or whatever it was, and they said, "Well, we're in Virginia, and we'll do that." WGR in Buffalo WGR 55 Buffalo or something is taken from an old song called "Shuffle Off to Buffalo." And this is all in the 60s, so they're referencing songs from the 50s and 40s. It wouldn't make much sense today.
Yeah.
Just trying to think of another one. WEEP in Pittsburgh. In Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, WEEP, which is, there was a song, that had that line, in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. It was
one of those famous Pittsburgh songs.
One of one. But there were a lot of those.
Because a lot of American cities did have songs sung about them by the Sinatras of this world, didn't they?
Yeah.
So were there other examples, Chicago or San Francisco? Or?
Well, yes. The end of the WLS legal ID to this day is... The way Chicago is sung, it's from the song.
Is it?
Yeah, I mean... And it's Chicago, So...
Yeah.
It's always been that. And sometimes it's a lot more subtle. Sometimes it's You wouldn't even notice it, but the old song "New York, New York, It's a Wonderful Town." The Bronx is up and the battery's down. It's Gene Kelly from an old musical movie. "New York, New York" has been sung to that melody numerous times at the end of IDs. In fact, I think it's the top of the hour cut in "Home of the Hits." The brass actually plays that. They don't sing it that way, but the brass actually goes before they go New York. So, they're in there.
And so it adds a kind of richness to jingles, doesn't it? This, because it certainly will satisfy the writers and those people who kind of know the reference point. But there will be a hope that there will be people out there who either subliminally or explicitly will say, "Ah, this is the station of my town." It kind of, it's anchored into it.
Yeah, I mean, my impression is it probably sails over most people's heads because they're not paying attention. But, I mean, that was during the golden age of logos when there were a lot of them.
Yeah.
And they all had their own little quirks and differences. But, everybody strove to have an identifiable melody that people would remember and recognize, and sing unaided and unprompted, and it worked.
Yeah.
You know, people who grew up with WABC, all 38 million of them, you know, the WABC tune is familiar to them to one extent or another.
Is that the most common logo that you've had to work on through the years? Is it the kind of the most dominant logo in radio?
Probably not now. It was, you know, when WABC was a music station and the number one in North America, and, you know, a lot of people wanted to be like them. So they would buy the WABC jingles and therefore use the WABC melody that they were used to hearing in them, although it could be changed, but a lot of people didn't.
Yeah.
You know, then the same became true of WLS, and the WLS logo became the Kiss FM logo. And then a lot of people wanted to be like Kiss FM, and so, you know, let's just demonstrate that for a minute.
Yeah.
Because WLS, okay, well, if you take off the double and you play what's left, you have, which is Kiss FM. So Kiss FM, the original one in Los Angeles, when they first came to us for jingles, the reason is they had heard... All right, let me back up very quickly. Okay.
And that was done without sound alteration devices. I can just, you know, vouch for that.
Nivesi, Nivesi, yeah, okay. That was 77 backwards. I can say 77 WABC backwards. It's a rare skill, and it comes from having edited so many tapes spooling them backwards and forwards. We do all know that W backwards is Wheelabut.
Right, okay.
And 77 is Nivesi, Nives.
Yes. The fact that you think we all know that suggests you have lived in a different parallel universe for quite a long time.
Okay. What I was going to say is this is a funny story. You be the judge.
Yeah.
In 1980, we did a custom package for WLS. We named it Outstanding. And obviously, it had the WLS logo in it. And some stations bought it. But it wasn't until a few years later when a station in Philadelphia, WCAU-FM, bought it. And again, it maintained that WLS logo with an extra few notes on the end. WCAU-FM. And the guy who would ultimately become the program director at Kiss FM in Los Angeles was from Philadelphia.
Right.
So he heard it on CAU and liked it and wanted it for his station. So he called us and got the Outstanding package as the first. It's not that Kiss didn't have jingles before, but in this format as a top 40 station, because they had been other things before that. But their first top 40 package, he picked Outstanding. And so we adapted the WLS to be Kiss FM. Except that, you know, he also wanted to say 102.7. So I just made it up. I said, okay. Because it led nicely into the thing. And because Kiss was so successful, and is, and that was their logo, you know, everybody everywhere wanted to be like Kiss,
yeah.
So they used that logo. And then, of course, you know, there are now dozens of stations calling themselves Kiss all over the place. Every city's got a Kiss.
Yeah.
That's what that line means. And, you know, and plenty of other companies, you know, make jingles that go like that and use that, which came out of my right hand. Do I get anything from that, you might ask? No, I don't. But I'm not bitter, so that's good.
Can logos be copyrighted?
That's an interesting question, but we'll get back to that. So the end of the Outstanding story is that after the jingles had been on Kiss FM for a little while, and they were getting a lot of attention and praise, I get this call, I swear this is true, from WLS wondering if they can get that great Kiss package. And I said, guys, it's your package. Oh, really? Yeah. So, okay. Just.
Great.
I'll leave that without comment. Can logos be copyrighted? That is a legal issue that is very complicated that our people have done some research on over the years, that there's a lot of different answers to. It's not a yes or no answer. A logo can be trademarked as an audio identifying thing, but that would be by the station using it. Depending on the length of the logo and how unique it is, you can, in some circumstances, copyright it. You know, if you say, this is my logo, so I'm going to copyright the note F, because yeah, that's my logo.
That means Jeff.
Yeah. You won't get very far. But, you know, if there's enough to it so that it actually is a musical creation or composition, you can. But, you know, it's easier to copyright an entire jingle than just this little element of it. But I have a file full of cases and legal notes and stuff that's this wide that talks about different precedents and legal things. It gets very boring and legal, but
okay. Yeah. You'll recall I don't really know anything at all about music, so this will be a foolish question, but my understanding is that major keys are these kind of upbeat, bright things, and minor keys often have a sense of, I don't know, not menace, but unease about them. If that part of my hypothesis is right, which it might not be, that would suggest that, generally speaking, logos are in major keys. And if not, what do they sound like? So to untangle that for us.
Okay, well, in the most elementary sense, I mean, a major chord is happy and a minor chord is sad.
Okay.
I mean,
that's what I was trying to say. Yeah.
So it's like, oh, that's nice. That's the nice. Sun's out. Oh, it's raining. You know, that's a stupid explanation, but you know what?
Yes.
Well, since most, most stations want their jingles to convey something bright and happy, they don't want to associate themselves with doom and gloom necessarily. So, you know, most logos tend to be, major and uplifting and so forth. But it's not so much the logo itself that's major or minor. It's the chords you put under it. Because I can play a major logo with minor chords under it, you know. Because
could you do that?
I mean, because, you know, if we go... that's pretty happy. But if I go, or, you know, let me see. That's not what I meant. I meant, well, what is that? That's a minor chord down there. So it's actually a big minor 9 chord. But, you know, but there are so many chords. It's all about... You know, each one of those is a different way to end that, and the melody's always the same. It's the chords under it.
So if I'm a radio station, what I want by day is something which is going to be bright and sunny, but in the evening for my love song show, I want it just to feel a bit more kind of moody and so on. Is that where your choice of those underlying chords is going to play in?
It's the chords, it's the instrumentation, the orchestration, and just the general feel of the track. I mean, you know, those love songs at night cuts are a lot softer and more laid back and pretty, as opposed to the real hard up-tempo driving things. What one other thing to throw in there when we were talking about what's the most common logo and so on. In the mid to late 60s, KHJ in Los Angeles became a really dominant station in that part of the country. And, you know, they had these jingles, primarily a cappellas at first. They did add some track cuts later on. But the logo was 93KHJ, which was famous. And again, because of their success with the format that Bill Drake put in there, you know, he then proceeded to consult all the other stations owned by that same company, which was RKO. And every place he went, you know, he would get those jingles done. And then, as was the case with, you know, the WABC fans and WLS fans, you had the stations wanting to emulate that format. And in some cases, they'd hire him for real, and in some cases, they tried to just steal bits of it and do it on their own. But in their mind, part of the magic was this logo. So you had a lot of stations with that logo, starting, you know, early 70s, persisting through today. There's a lot of people who think that's the logo to use.
Yeah.
You know, the WCBS-FM logo that we sing for them today is, you know, was inspired initially because, you know, Joe McCoy, who was the program director there when we first started doing their jingles in the 80s, had worked at WOR-FM, which was one of those RKO stations created by Bill Drake.
Yeah.
And they had those jingles that went WOR-FM. So in wanting to relive his glory top 40 days, it became WCBS-FM. And now they've pretty much dropped the W, so it's just, you know, now it's just CBS-FM for the most part.
Yeah.
But there's a history and a heritage of all these things.
Yes.
So
I want to pause the recording there and then come back and talk about logos.